Welcome to an open house meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California, on February 13th, 2013.
Hi, this is John. Good to see you here. Good to be here. Don't have much to talk about, so I'm going to begin by answering a little bit of mail, one posting in the forum, from a new member of the forum. This is my first post in the forum. Thank you, John and Carla. I was wondering what John's or any community member's thoughts were on the following. I usually meditate 20 to 30 minutes in the morning and at night, but since coming across John's teaching, by the way, it's not a teaching, since coming across John's teaching, it rings a little hollow to me now. I know John teaches that the pursuing or not pursuing other spiritual practices is beside the point of the looking, so I'm not having any guilt or such about it. But I wondered, since I have this time anyway, and it's become part of my daily routine, would it be better used for extended looking? I know one can't abide in or try to become one with the sense of me. That's what rings hollow now in my current meditation. But can repeated looking, that is coming back to look again and again as it may be, advisable? Or should I just do something else with that time and just look whenever it occurs to me to do so as John suggests? Maybe, you know, when I first looked at this, I didn't realize it, but there's two things that I really would like to say something about here. There's almost nothing to be gained from deliberately trying to spend more time in the act of looking. So far as I can tell, and what seems to be bearing out in the experience of many others, is that the first instance of that act of trying to get a direct experience of what it feels like to be you, that kind of requires some deliberate, well, it does require some deliberate determination to find a way to move your attention in a way that that happens. And I'm not going to get into a big thing about how to do it, because I personally think that it's pretty easy, although it might seem hard, and the how to do it is entirely determined by the personality itself that's involved in this. But the act of looking comes from direct experience. I mean, the act of looking comes from a direct intention and a determination to do it. In most cases, that actual experience that is being sought is not even consciously accomplished. In some cases it is. And over time, of course, it becomes more and more easy to recognize the feel of you here, and it's the fact that you are always in your own awareness, it becomes apparent over time. But in any event, it takes some intention to do the first act of looking. But that first act of looking, so far as we can tell, and consistent with what more and more people are reporting back to us now, that first act of looking is all that you need to worry about. Once you do that, whatever's needed in the way of bringing attention to the feel of you will kind of happen automatically. There is the normal way in which this, most common way in which this thing unfolds is that there can be either, well, there can be a varied amount of effort required to get that first look, and it may never actually have the sense that you did that. But that then, one will find oneself doing that act or trying to do it again and again in no particular pattern, in no particular consistency. It'll just happen as it happens. And then there'll come a time when one notices that that conscious act of trying to move attention in that direction isn't happening anymore. And what might be noticed at the same time is the ever-presentness of the experience of you, which doesn't give you anything or take anything away from you. After all, it is just you. Just you. Now, so far as I can tell, there's no use whatsoever to deliberately extending the period of spending time trying to feel what it feels like to be you. And there's certainly no point, if it's easy for you to get to that feeling, there's certainly no point for you to do so. I mean, all of the interest is out here in the world, in the life. The quiet, unmoving, pristine reality of your nature is not very interesting at all. As to pursuing other spiritual practices at the same time, that too is of no consequence one way or the other. It means nothing whatsoever. Feel free to pursue any spiritual practices you might be drawn to, although I expect that you will, as our writer here has found, you will find interest in spiritual practices falling away. These are not other spiritual practices. These are spiritual practices. And then there's religious practices, and there's, entertainment practices and all kinds of practices that we can engage in and enjoy or not enjoy. And it has no effect whatsoever on the fact that you are untouched, unharmed, unhelped, untouched at all by anything that you, any experience that comes and goes within you. So we don't care about those things. I doubt that spiritual practices will continue for long after the looking has done its job, but what do I know? So, one thing that you can do, if you have had an established practice of spending time in a regular way doing meditation practices, and you feel that, and you want to continue doing that in some way that's useful rather than some way that's just beside the point, then what I would advise you to do is to engage in the kind of meditation training that we talk about here. I mean, the kind of mindfulness training that we talk about here, which is really training in our capacity and skill and strength of controlling where we put our attention. And the one particular way in which we talk about, which could be considered a kind of an introduction to what I'm trying to suggest, is the mindfulness training exercise that consists in counting the breath. Descriptions of that are available on the website and pretty easy to find. And the reason that this is something that you might want to take up is because it becomes quickly apparent to us as time goes on that the only thing we have any actual control over, and it's not all that strong, our control, but the only thing we have any actual control over seems to be where we put our attention. And for the most part, I was speaking of myself, and I think this, I'm not all that out of the ordinary. For the most part, we have let our attention pretty much do whatever it feels like doing. It goes willy-nilly to any bright, shiny object that appears within the the context of the mind and goes there and then moves on to something else and so forth and so on. And that's okay. That's actually kind of cool when it's not sickened by the fear. But in the matter having to do with the effective and skillful and satisfying relationship with life that becomes available when we are stripped of our protection from life, the way to become skillful and effective in what can be done about the way we relate to life and about the way the life unfolds, really, is to learn and become skilled and strong at deliberately putting our attention at what needs to be attended to. And the more practice we get at that, just like everything else, the more practice we get at deliberately moving our attention to things that seem to actually need attending to, the more skillful and strong we will get at controlling our attention, and also the more informed we will become about what constitutes something that is worthy of attention and what constitutes something that is just simply not worthy of attention. And what constitutes things that are, you know, really uncomfortable. So my advice to those who have had meditation practices and are wondering whether they should continue in that because they had some good things have happened to them as a result of it, is just that. Use your meditation time to become more skillful at using more skillful and more supple and more informed about using your ability to move your attention to attend to what needs attending to decline to attend to what does not need attending to. And that meditation practice, and I suppose it could be called kind of meditation, that meditation practice will serve you continuously throughout the rest of your life, and it will serve you incrementally. The better you get at it, the more you do it, the stronger you get, the more clearly you see what you're doing and how it works and so forth, that you will continuously receive the benefits of that particular meditation practice. So my advice is don't worry about trying to go back to the looking when the looking departs from you. Don't worry about trying to make it depart while it's still there. Don't worry about the looking at all beyond that first look. That first look triggers it, and from then on in, it's on its own and it'll do just fine without your attention. But if you're interested in the mind, and if you're interested in the actually wondrous power of the mind, and if you're interested in learning how to use what you can do it's not like you're miserable if you don't do this. It's just that you get something from this that you can't get from anything else. And that's this sense of control, this sense of actually being able to intelligently figure out what to look at and what not to look at. So, that's all I have. I thank you for your patience. I'm going to post this in the forum in response to the guy's posting, and that's... and that's a big help to me. So thank you for listening to me. Now, anybody want to talk to me? I'm happy to talk to you. Just raise your hand and we'll wait and see if anybody does. Good to see you here. Okay, we got two people. Jim was first by a half of a second. So, Jim?
Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
Well, not too bad. I just wanted to say hi. Didn't have much to talk about. I couldn't stand the sounds, I guess. Like I say, I just wanted to say hi. I haven't been in one of your webinars in quite a while. I used to listen to them when I was unemployed, and then I got a job, and I'm unemployed again. So, because, you know, during the day I'm at work is what I'm trying to say. So, anyway, I enjoyed your last talk on mindfulness. That comes from Buddhism, doesn't it, originally? Isn't that a Buddhist practice?
That's where I learned it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I do that a lot, actually. It's, you talk about, the mind that you'll more, skillfully be able to focus on things, that occupy your mind. Seems like most of what occupies my mind is a lot of useless babble. I'm serious, you know. It seems like the only function, that I need my mind for is like, you know, if I'm on the computer, you know, I gotta look at what I'm doing, focus on that, and things like that, you know, or at work, of course, focus on what I'm doing at work. But other than that, you know, my mind just goes to what am I gonna have for dinner tonight, you know, or something somebody said to me earlier, good or bad, of course, you know, and it's just, it all seems pretty useless. So, I kind of like the idea of just actually just watching my mind at any one moment and not being lost in thought, you know. It's more, I guess, more desirable. But, it, you know, rather than focus on any useless thought that I might have about my, as my mind wanders, I just, you know, just look at it. Of course, I don't know if you said it, mentioned before, you probably have, but, you talk about, you know, having anxiety and fear. If, when I used to have a lot of anxiety, and when I, start watching the anxiety, you really can't watch it, because as I start looking at my thought pattern and my actual thoughts, they go away, which automatically reduces the anxiety, because it's the thoughts that are producing the anxiety, you know, the what if.
I don't think it's the thoughts that are producing anxiety.
What else could it be?
It's the underlying context of the fear of life that produces the anxiety. The thoughts are formed in compliance with that underlying assumption that life is to be feared and mistrusted.
Yeah, the thoughts are formed, but I mean, you... I might.
Thoughts are just thoughts, Jim. They don't do anything. They have no agency to them. They are mechanical things that appear in compliance with the context in which they appear.
And, yeah, but I mean, you trigger a response, the fight or flight mechanism when you feel that your security is in danger.
Yeah, and that's fine. Fight or flight is fine. The thing that is the problem is not any of that stuff. The only problem is the underlying sense that is not even always recognized. The underlying sense that is the foundation of everything, that there's something wrong with life. That there's something about life to be feared.
Yes, but
that's the only problem. When that goes, the rest of it's just life.
Yeah, but that's all based on security, right? I mean, the fight or flight mechanism kicks in when you think that your security is threatened.
This is the thing. Now let me follow up on this. This is very good, because this is exactly the thing I'm talking about. The flight or fight mechanism is triggered when there is something that enters your mind that has been previously somehow defined to be a threat.
Yes.
Something's going to hurt you.
Right.
Okay? And that has nothing to do with any agency. You know, when something appears that's perceived to be a threat, fight or flight kicks in.
Right.
Now, what happens when the fear of life goes is that the things that trigger that fight or flight response become much less. And thoughts don't do it. And there's nothing wrong with the fight or flight. That's what keeps us from getting run over by trucks and cars and so forth. But the sense that I am in jeopardy because there's some negative feeling here is just crazy. It just is a symptom of the fear. So that what happens is that the impulse to want to correct the present bad feeling doesn't appear. We're not trying to correct it. at all. And, that's all I was just saying.
Yeah, well, I think a person's flight or fight response can be kicked in when you mentioned, like, so we don't get run over by a car, but as an example, ironically, you know, I used to have a terrible fear of speaking in groups or in front of people, and I remember one time I defined myself pretty clearly to someone and myself that it was as if I felt I was going to die. I mean, my heart started pounding terribly. I actually felt that the feeling I had was in my response from my body was as if I was going to die.
Yeah, but that was an irrational feeling, right?
Well, sure.
Or at least an irrational interpretation of the feeling.
Oh, sure, but it was still the fight or flight response kicking in based on no physical threat.
Let me ask you something, okay?
All right.
Do you think you've ever done what I've asked in the sense of looking at you?
Oh, yes, I have, yes.
Yeah?
Okay. I just did it a minute ago, actually.
Yeah, okay. My advice to you, as to everybody, you have an active mind, you know, and I'll tell you something else too. It takes time. I'm a little bit kind of, off kilter here because I don't know how long it has been since you say it's been a long time, and a lot's happened in a long time. This is not a teaching, right?
Right.
This isn't a teaching. A teaching is static and fixed and passed from person to person or generation to generation, and the main feature of it that is presented is that it's unchanging, that it's passed on correctly and so forth from one person to the next. This is not a teaching. This is a kind of adventure that we're all engaged in, having somehow by some incredible stroke of luck stumbled upon the fact that if you look at you, the fear of life will disappear, and everything changes. It's not that it changes for the better or the worse. Everything changes when in the way that my relationship with life is no longer one of distance and suspicion and constant interrogation, but life rushes in on us. And there we are. Sometimes in a very wild, unexpected world of the mind, a really wild and unexpected world. And what we're talking about when I talk about mindfulness meditation, I'm not talking about trying to do the same old thing that we've been doing blindly in compliance to the context of the fear, which is to figure out what needs to be zapped and what needs to be held on to and what things I don't have to attend to at all. Life is interesting, and life takes constant attention. How long has it been?
Yeah. Since what?
Since you were here before.
Oh, probably eight or 9 months.
Yeah, lots happened, man.
Have
you been to the forums?
No, I haven't.
please go to the forums. There's so much. What's happening here, see, is not a teaching. It is a growing number of people considering together what we're beginning to see as a result of what has come to us from the looking. And what you'll see in the forums is like you'll see nowhere else. There's people talking frankly and straightforwardly about the effects that the looking has had on them and the problems that they have, that have come to them in the course of the effects of the looking. And it's just really a remarkable place. I would really appreciate it if you would go and read some of the stuff in the forums and maybe we could talk again. Follow me?
Okay, I'll have to do that. Yeah, I'll do that. I like to debate.
I got nothing to debate, you know? I mean, if you look, the problem would be solved, but depending upon a number of factors, the way in which the resolution manifests itself and the length of time it takes for things actually to be really clarified can be widely different for different people. Okay?
Yeah, okay. I was just going to say that either as a result of the looking or mindfulness, my anxiety has been greatly diminished.
That's the looking.
Okay, well, good. Because, then that's encouragement for other people then. I mean, I had terrible anxiety, and I don't really have it anymore. I mean, occasionally I'll get a little shot of adrenaline, you know, when something happens, you know, whatever that might be. But, I mean, I can put myself in this, I mean, I've noticed myself in circumstances where, you know, lately, where I would react, you know, negatively and with a certain amount of anxiety and where those things don't exist anymore. Well, for instance, right now I'm unemployed, you know, and before I would have a lot of anxiety over that, you know, worry. I mean, a shot of adrenaline every time my mind comes up to the idea that I'm unemployed, you know, and that dissonance doesn't exist anymore. I mean, I don't know what I'm going to do, you know, to pay my bills, but I'm not suffering over, let's just put it, I'm not suffering.
Jim?
Yes.
That's, boy, you got to read the forums. That's exactly what happens to everybody.
Oh, really?
What you're describing and the anxiety goes away and it's like, where'd it go? How come? You know? And you'll see the descriptions in the forum are the same as your own experience.
Yeah, I was looking. It's okay. Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. I mean, it really is. I mean, I was I was quite an anxious human being. Let's put it that way, you know.
So. Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
But I'm not anymore.
I'm glad to hear that. That's the payoff. See, that's the deal. That's what you get. An end to the angst, the underlying. Oh my God, there's something wrong. There must be something wrong. Nothing's happened in a while.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I know. Like, I mean, yeah, because like I say, I mean, similar, I mean, even going to a new job, like I said, I was off on for a while and then I got reemployed and I expected, you know, I mean, in the past I would have been filled with all kinds of anxiety, which might be normal for someone who starts a new job. It just didn't exist. It was gone.
Yes, that's right. That's it. Please read the forums, okay?
All right. I'll do that. Thanks.
And let me know. Stay in touch. You don't have to. Take off, right?
Okay, John. Okay. I just have one more question. I just wondered, I've forgotten all about it. What was it, November? You were going to have a worldwide looking at one point in time, right? You know what I'm referring to?
I know what you're referring to. That happened, what that turned into was a live broadcast. We now have the capability of live video, you know, almost TV-like broadcast over the internet. And it turned into a live broadcast, which was well attended, and a lot of things came out of it. And that happened in last month. I don't remember the exact date, but last month. And you should check out we have a YouTube channel. It's the Just One Look YouTube channel. And you'll see the broadcast there and a bunch of other stuff there, too. And we actually are now One of the things that has come out of that is that we are now planning to, when we have the time to put it together, we're planning to begin a series of regular live broadcasts over YouTube like that. Okay? So check it out and go to the channel, the YouTube channel, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay, John. Thanks a lot for your time.
Okay, Jim. Laquita. Is it Laquita or Laquita?
Laquita.
Okay.
The last 2 weeks or so, I kind of just went crazy. And it's not completely gone. I thought it was gone, but it was. It's, apparently it's not. But I'm going to talk to you about what happened before the craziness, and just talking about it. It might, the craziness might come back, and I might not make any sense at all.
It's okay.
And if that happens, you just say, Laquita, just stop, and okay. You know, take 2 aspirin and call me when it's over.
Okay.
But, okay.
Okay.
The last time I talked to you was in December, the last webinar in December. And when that conversation took place, it was I had just noticed something different in my, like, everyday, ordinary awareness. And I didn't understand what it was, but it was undeniably different. And I was talking to you about it. And describing what it had been like, that there was something here that I didn't know what it was, and it was just in my face and wouldn't go away, all that. You said, that's you. And I heard you say that. But it's, well, I didn't know that for sure for myself. So I just kind of stumbled over that and got all excited about telling you about how it is now, this ordinary business. You know, I could breathe and all that stuff. And I never got back to, how can that be me if it's gone? That was my cobbled together understanding of what happened, that was gone. And so I spent, you know, weeks, it just slowly unfolding. And, I won't even go into all the unfolding part, just skip all that I got to the point where the desire to understand, I thought was understanding, or to see, was so strong that even though I was trying to move my attention back to my breath and all that stuff, but it was so strong that I decided I didn't care how unskillful it was. I didn't care about if I fell into that vortex of nihilistic thought patterns that I've been afraid of falling into forever. I didn't care. I'm going to look at it anyway. And soon as that passed through, an image came in to my mind, and I recognized, and this didn't make any difference, but it was a great big disc, you know, like a black and white photograph of the moon. And soon as I saw it, I knew exactly what it was. This is all the stuff that's been in my mind for all these weeks right here. Just the questions that it came up that was so interesting that caught my attention for like a week or so after it started happening. The understanding, the misunderstanding, everything was right there. I thought, you know, that's pretty cool. And as soon as my attention hit the next thing, I recognized it as clarity. And as soon as I recognized it as clarity, it's like I was completely stunned silent. I mean, just stunned. And the thought came into my head, I have never seen from this perspective before. I've never seen 2 things at the same time. And when that thought came through, I had a physical calming down effect. And I just thought, okay, hey, I can look at the facts. That's all I have to do. I just look at the facts about what's going on from this change and the way it was and the way it is now. And then I remembered this, the thought that what you said, that's me, that came into my head. And very calmly, it's like, how can that be so? How can that be me if it's gone? And I said, you know, I haven't checked to see if it's gone. It was so obvious that when the change made, I just assumed that's what had gone. And I said, well, I can look and see if it's gone. Cause if it's me, I gotta still be here. And as soon as that thought went, I got a slice, a glimpse of what had been here the whole time, and it was exactly the same. It's exactly the same. I don't understand. How can that be? How can that be me? All that. How can all that be me? And so, well, let me look at it how it was. It was this me feeling was so big before, and now it feels like it's receded in the background. And that's when that white paper metaphor that I hate came to my head. That's the white paper. This small feeling of me is this white paper. And I said, well, where's the print? Well, the print is all this stuff that's been going on in my mind all this time. You know, all that. And I said, well, what was I didn't understand how I could have felt the feeling of me all this time and not recognized it. And then it says, well, maybe the gap that was there closed at some point, I don't know when, and I was just feeling life in all this stuff. Life in me feels the same as one thing, but all this stuff inside there, all the thoughts and sensations, everything is just there. And that's when a part of a quote that I remember back from years ago when I meditated, the form and formless are the same. It's just all one thing. How can that be? It's all one thing. How wrong am I?
I'm kind of stuck dumb here, Laquita. It is what I'm not sure. Do you have a question that I can answer?
Do I have a question
to help me focus? It's very plain to me what is happening, and it is very, very good news. It's not bad news. But if you have a question, maybe I can. Listen.
Okay.
Listen. There's such a hodgepodge of things that you have thrown up here, all right?
Yeah.
So let me try to get some focus, all right? First of all, the actual sensation that is recognizable as you, or as me, as you would call
right.
it. That actual sensation is probably the most subtle and featureless sensation of all. We are not here, you see. These creatures, these individual human beings, these creatures, our interest in taking birth, however that taking birth took place, however, whatever it means or doesn't mean and so forth. But when we finally get here and we're taking birth, our interest has nothing whatsoever to do with that infinitely subtle underlying sensation that is me. What is of interest to the arising and developing and forming human mind is all the experiences that are so much more powerful than the experience of me. All those experiences, those are of interest to us. And then the second most important thing is that's of interest to us is the thoughts, ideas, understandings, and points of view that come into being naturally, mechanically, in relationship with those external experiences that are coming to us with so much greater force than the underlying sense of me, which is the most subtle possible sensation imaginable. Now, those ideas and thoughts and understandings and points of view and so forth that are generated in response to incoming experience that's strong, those things become the fixed ideas and the fixed ways of looking at things that form over time in habit as we see the same thing again and see that it's the same as it was before. It's either hurtful or helpful or irrelevant. So that those points of view, those understandings, those relationships with arising phenomena, they all become kind of set in place. And everything, there's a kind of a homeostasis that occurs. So that there's all of this activity going on. There's this undercurrent of very faint anxiety. And there's all of the ways of thinking about things and defining things and relating to things and so forth that have come into being, catch as catch can in reaction in relation to what's happening. Now, what happens when you look? And the taste of you is actually quite attractive, although it's so subtle that it's very difficult to be, I guess it'd be quiet enough to actually get the sense of it. But we do, for a tenth of a second or whatever, and when we do that, when we take that conscious movement of attention and start looking not at the arising phenomena, start trying to get a glimpse not of the continuously arising and extremely interesting phenomena, and not of the continuously arising and somewhat interesting thoughts about phenomena, but we're now deliberately trying to find that infinitely subtle sensation that is me, that is within and behind and everywhere, there, everywhere, everywhere. When we do that, for reasons that I'm not quite sure of yet, we're trying to understand these things, and there's a lot of people working on it too. But for reasons that I don't quite understand yet, when we make that movement of attention, trying to get the taste of me in this room, a closed room that's full of noise of all that other stuff going on. When we make that first attempt, that destroys the underlying context, the underlying sense that there's something wrong here. That there's something that I should be afraid of here. When that happens, there's a period, and this is becoming a consistent report from people. When that happens, there is usually a period of relief and surprise at how easy everything is, and a kind of new sense of fearlessness and contentment, satisfaction. That lasts for a little bit of time, and the time it lasts is idiosyncratic. That lasts for a little bit of time. And then what happens next? And again, the intensity of it is entirely idiosyncratic, but the fact of it is pretty much universal in people who have done this now. What happens next is everything seems to go to pieces. The whole idea that you were free just departs. It's things are worse than they have ever been. There is just no, I can't understand why in the world I ever thought things were good in the first place. And all of that commentary is commentary being mechanically generated by all of those fixed ideas about what should be and what shouldn't be and so forth and so on. All of that commentary is empty of any meaning. It's just like wind-up dolls chattering, blah, 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 blah. But the feel of it is misery and loss and craziness and all kinds of stuff like that. It's during that time that the use of this mindfulness training that I speak of becomes most needed, most valuable, and the development of it can become the richest in that time when everything seems to fall apart. And it is as you say, you know, it's not like it's easy, as you pointed out, it's not easy to decide that you're not going to attend to. And here's another thing, Laquita. I just thought of this, and I want to say it. The idea that what you decided to attend to was the wrong thing to attend to is just crazy. That's the craziness. The more that you practice the strength you have to attend to what needs attending to and decline to attend to what doesn't need attending to, like negativity or whatever it is, the more supple and creative you will become. And it's not like, I mean, it's like, it doesn't take constant attention. But the more that happens, the more supple and creative you will become. Your ability to see what is needed and what is not needed will become that you'll find yourself looking at perhaps the very kind of things that you were telling me you were looking at, thinking that you were not doing the thing that I wanted you to do. This stuff is not like, it's not like you should do mindfulness meditation for the rest of your life and you should become really good and really accomplished and really expert at being able to count your breath or being able to move attention or doing anything of the kind. That mindfulness training serves only to develop and strengthen and make more supple the spontaneous placement of attention where it belongs. So, to make a long story short, I think you're doing fine. I think that what's happening here is exactly what so many other people are reporting. And I think that you'll find that things are going to be just, what happens is also, Laquita, is that things don't happen like a big dramatic thing happens. It's just that you notice, and I think you talked about this a little bit when you were telling me, you just notice that at some point you'll notice that, or maybe it was Jim talking about it, you notice that, oh, huh, imagine that. I don't feel that way anymore or whatever. Is that helpful at all?
I'm going to have to let that sink in, I guess.
Did you go to the forums?
Yes. I haven't been able to post since like August because that door is closed to me right now, but I read them.
Yeah, you don't have to post, but you've read some of the new ones, right, by people
yes.
coming back.
Yeah, I keep up with that. I read it a lot. And I don't know. I'm just I hear you saying that everything that just I just described was just a part of the noise.
Part of the noise.
Yeah.
Is that what
you're saying? Part of the noise. Of all this noise that's going on in my head, you know, that's just part of it.
There's no telling how much, whether any of it is valuable or not, because there's so much noise that everything is kind of swamped by the noise.
And the fact that I recognize the fact that this little sliver of this, whatever it was exactly like what it's been feeling like for these 2 years that I've been looking, but then I just didn't know what it was.
And so
I hear you saying that was not the feeling of me for this whole time, and what I saw that matched that was not the feeling of me. I'm just misunderstanding myself.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that what you thought to be you is you indeed, and the fact that it disappeared has nothing to do with it having disappeared. It has to do with its infinite subtlety and the fact that it's just it takes effort to look there. Yeah, the time will come. The time will come, and you may even have described it. And I don't know, you know, we don't know much about the course of these things. But the time will certainly come when you will notice that you are always aware of that. That time comes. And it doesn't come as a result of continuous effort to get a taste of it.
Right.
It just comes in the natural unfolding of it. That's my experience. There's never a time when I am not aware of this. And I can see where it can be quite confusing that it should have seemed to disappear and then it's everywhere, but it was always everywhere. It was always everywhere before you heard of it.
Right.
You know, it's always everywhere. You are always everywhere, but you are so subtle that you are unnoticed until that first effort's made. And this is what the other thing that happens, though, Preacher. The time comes when you realize that you're always aware of yourself. How could you not be? You know what I mean?
Well, I thought that time had came. I thought that's what.
Well,
when I said that it left, that was the misunderstanding. I thought
yes,
that's
that
right.
Was the misunderstanding.
Right.
That's right.
And then when I saw the glimpse that it was exactly the same, then I realized no, that didn't go. That just receded into the background. What must have happened is that the separation from me from my life, now that I can't tell the difference where I stop and where my life begins, you know, it's just all one thing.
Yeah, that's right.
But I don't know. I mean, I'm clear on the fact that the taste I got was the same as it for the whole 2 years. I'm clear on that inside myself, but I get the sense that you're not clear on it, that I know what I'm talking about, and I might not.
Oh, I'm entirely clear on that. You know what you're talking about. That one thing that you said was what clarified everything to me. I'm entirely clear that you know what you're talking about. You absolutely know what you're talking about. That you tried to get a whole glimpse of and finally succeeded, that seemed to disappear from you, that what finally was revealed to be always here all the time, that's the authentic and absolutely true description of my own experience and the experience of many others. It is the same. I have no doubt about it.
Okay. Okay, then that's good. It's all good. And if that's the case, if the very first time I talked to you, John, the very first question I wanted to you to tell me if the glimpse I've got was authentic and it was all convoluted into some kind of experience. And you said the proof is in the pudding. You know, thanks, you know, but it is and it will be. Right?
That's right. I'm glad we finally got to the fact. Yeah, that was the thing. When you start, you know, all the rest of the stuff you're talking about is all the rest of the stuff is going
exactly.
on.
Exactly.
But when you told me that now it seems like you thought it had gone and now it seems like it's everywhere, that's the proof of the pudding right there. That's it. That's okay. That's the case. And things will get, it's not that life may get easier, you know, life gets easier, life gets harder according to the laws of cause and effect.
Right.
But it is for certain that your experience of your life will be rich and satisfying and fulfilling and nourishing and not something to be shied away from and not something to be ignored in favor of thoughts about your life.
Right.
You follow me?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So stay with me. Let me know.
And that's
how you're
further
doing,
proof
okay?
in the pudding. Yeah.
Huh?
That's further proof in the pudding.
Yes, that's right.
Okay. Okay,
thanks,
John.
So much. I'm glad you talked to me.
Yeah, I am too, because I've been hesitating. It's been 2 weeks that it's just turned into drama whether I should or shouldn't talk to you.
Yeah. I'm really happy you did.
Thank you for your help.
Oh, thank you for being here, Laquita. Let me see, what time is it? It's 12:03. Don Wolf, I'm gonna say hello to you and let you say hello to me, and that's about it, okay? So
much for not limiting my response. I want to say this. Nothing's wrong. Nothing ever was wrong. However, by not allowing protracted silences today, you have contributed to the smidgen of mental health that remains within me.
Well, I think.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And, it's just fine.
Okay.
In a
it's
way
good,
that,
it was a good meeting.
In a way that I never thought it would be. That's okay. All. Talk to you.
Okay. Sure. You're very welcome, Don. Thank you so much. Okay, I'm done here. I think Carla needs to have a word with you, and I always think that you should certainly listen to Carla. I listen to Carla every chance I get. It is one of the great pleasures of my life. So I'm gone. Carla's here. I love you all. I'll see you the next time. Be well. Really, be well. And enjoy your life.
You just listened to an open house meeting with John Sherman, broadcast live from Ojai, California on February 13th, 2013. For more live recordings, visit our podcast at www.justoneloop.org.